Good morning. This meeting will come to order. Welcome to the November 21st, 2025 regular meeting of the Local Agency Formation Commission. Our clerk today is Victor Young, and I'd also like to thank Suze Enos at SFGovTV for broadcasting our meeting today. I'm Commission Chair Jackie Fielder, joined by Commission Vice Chair Williams and Commission Sevier. Mr. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Yes, I'm calling the roll. Commissioner Sevier. Sevier present. Commissioner Williams.
Present.
Williams present. Commissioner Fielder.
Present.
Fielder present. We have a quorum.
Thank you. And Mr. Clerk, can you please read the communications for item two?
Item number two, communications. LAFCO is convening hybrid meetings that allow in-person attendance and public comment while still providing remote access and public comment via telephone. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. Those attending in person will be allowed to speak first, and then we will take those who are waiting on the telephone line. If you wish to provide public comment remotely, the call information is scrolling across the screen. When connected, you will hear the meeting discussion, but you will be muted and in listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, those joining us in person should line up to speak, and those on the telephone should dial *3 to be added to the speaker line. If you're on the telephone, please remember to turn down your TV and listening devices that you may be using. You may submit public comment via email to Erica Major, ERICA.MAJOR at sfgov.org. Or you may also send them in writing via U.S. mail to City Hall, 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. If you submit written comment, it will be forwarded to the commissioners and added to the file. Madam Chair, that concludes my communications.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Can you please call item three?
Item number three is the approval of the LAFCO minutes for September 19, 2025 regular meeting.
Colleagues, any changes to the minutes from the September 19th, 2025 regular meeting? Seeing no names on the roster, Mr. Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you. Members of the public who wish to comment on this matter, you can press *3 if you're on the telephone to be recognized. Those in attendance, please line up to speak on your right. You will have 2 minutes. There's nobody in the room, and double checking online. We have nobody online for public comment.
Seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Motion made by Commissioner Williams, seconded by Commissioner Sevier. Mr. Clerk, please call the roll.
Yes, on that motion, Commissioner Sevier.
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. That motion passes without objection.
Thank you. And Mr. Clerk, can you please call, without objection, the minutes are approved. Mr. Clerk, can you please call item four?
Yes, item number four is the Clean Power SF updates.
And for this, we have a presentation from Clean Power SF on their regular updates. Thank you so much to Ms. Cheryl Taylor and Adrian Dang for being here. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, and good morning, LAFCO commissioners. My name is Cheryl Taylor, and I'm the operations manager for Clean Power SF, the city's community choice aggregation program operated by the SFPUC's Power Enterprise. I'm here today to provide an update on the Clean Power SF program, covering the following topics. We have our usual update on Clean Power SF's customer enrollment and service statistics. I'm also happy to share a status on customer programs, some recent happenings there. I'll also provide an update on the Clean Power SF Integrated Resource Plan. And finally, my colleague Adrian Dang and I will talk about electric energy affordability. All right, on to enrollment and service statistics. So the program continues to successfully serve our customers with participation remaining strong and steady at about 95%. In particular, Super Green participation is stable and usage has been growing. It now represents about 19% of Clean Power SF's annual retail sales. I'll say that this demand growth is mostly due to continued commercial customer enrollment in response to the city's renewable energy ordinance, which requires large commercial buildings to purchase 100% renewable energy. Now, turning to programs that we offer, this slide provides an overview of all of our offerings, both current and in development, and these programs provide services or incentives for customers to transition away from using greenhouse gas emitting energy, reduce or shift their energy consumption during peak periods, and to balance their electric bill payments over time. We want to spotlight one program in particular that we began offering all electric multifamilies to Clean Power SF customers who are owners and owner representatives of multifamily affordable housing. And this program is to help them understand how to transition their buildings from natural gas to efficient all electric systems. And I'll say it's called the All Electric Multifamily Housing Program. So we offer this on a first-come, first-served basis and provide electric audits, transition plans, guidance on available incentives, and technical support to building owners and their owner representatives. Turning now to the Integrated Resource Plan. You may recall the general information we have shared about the Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP, in previous meetings this year. Briefly, it's an energy planning process used by utilities and energy service providers like Clean Power SF to support achieving policy goals and meeting regulatory requirements. It's required by state law, and Clean Power SF must prepare and submit an IRP to the California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, about every 2 years. So onto the schedule. The filing deadline itself is now official. The CPUC has confirmed that it will be May 5th, 2026. Now, we've noted in previous updates that the schedule has been delayed, but I will say a major driver of that delay has been the CPUC's late provision of its guidelines and filing requirements. As I've said, they've been delayed several times, but we now expect them to be available to us as well as other filers by month's end. But in the meantime, we've developed our goals, scenarios, and input resource assumptions, so we'll be ready to move quickly once the final materials are released. The portfolio modeling work will run into early next year, with initial results shared in public fora by late January through February. We'll also conduct additional public engagement in February and March, and then present the final recommended portfolio to our commission, the SFPUC Commission, by late April for their adoption. After that, we'll prepare the full submission to the CPUC by their May 5th deadline. Now turning to electric energy affordability, we present some customer metrics we have available and share recent Clean Power SF community activities around affordability. And as I mentioned earlier, my colleague Adrian Dang, who is our affordability analyst, will talk about our affordability and arrearage management project. My graphic was a little late there, but anyway. So electric energy affordability metrics. We are tracking key metrics to better understand affordability and payment challenges faced by our customers. This includes indicators of disconnection risk and participation in assistance programs, rather. In reviewing data on PG&E disconnections of Clean Power SF customers from earlier this summer, July to October, we see that about 36,000 customer accounts received notices warning of disconnection. But during this time, 124 customers were disconnected for non-payment. We're also monitoring participation in support programs, including the state's low-income programs, California Alternate Rates for Energy, or CARE, and the Family Electric Rate Assistance, or FERA, as well as the federally funded Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP. So looking now at this table, we're providing a broad picture of customers throughout San Francisco by supervisor district, showing the number of active customers, CARE and FAIR enrollments, as well as those PG&E service disconnections for non-payment, bill non-payment. Moving now to some of our community activities. This past October, we held a series of affordability drive events focused on helping customers enroll in discount programs. These events were designed to meet customers in their own neighborhoods and to provide in-language support. We partnered with trusted community organizations to host four events across San Francisco in the Mission, Bayview Hunters Point, Chinatown, and Potrero Hill. At each event, we provided multilingual one-on-one support to guide customers through the CARE and FARA application process and answer questions about their bills and service. These events were a huge success, with about 470 people attending across all four, 143 completed CARE and FARA applications, and over 75% of those applications completed in a language other than English. But beyond those numbers, these drives strengthen our relationships with community partners and really gave us valuable insights into the barriers that customers face when trying to access assistance. So these are a few snapshots from the four events that were held around town. And here's a screenshot, kind of hard to see, I know, but a screenshot of our marketing materials in multiple languages. So now I turn the presentation over to Adrian Dang to present our affordability and arrearage management project.
Hi everyone, I'm Adrian. I'm an affordability analyst with the Power Enterprise, and I will be covering the Power Affordability and Arrearage Management Project. As you all know, San Francisco faces distinct energy affordability challenges driven by the high cost of living, the need for equitable access to power, as well as its unique energy landscape. Rising arrearages and affordability issues have highlighted the need for a comprehensive affordability and arrearage management plan. Earlier this year, we launched the Affordability and Arrearage Management Project to better understand and address these challenges. There are two main deliverables from this project: a best practices and benchmarking report, which will have analysis of our current programs and policies, and then the policy and program recommendations plan, which will outline actionable strategies and next steps. And then moving on to the methodology, we are working with a consultant, AECOM, on this project. The methodology is broken down into two main components. There's the benchmarking research and case studies, and then the other part of it is the external stakeholder and customer engagement. So AECOM is first conducting desktop research to look at affordability trends across the utilities sector. From that research, we will conduct case study interviews with utilities to learn their experiences in program design, enrollment, and effectiveness. And the other part will be engaging customers and organizations that serve them through surveys and interviews to understand what additional support may be needed. The goal is to be intentional with how we are going about the project and to produce a final plan and recommendations that are informed by research, lessons learned from other utilities, as well as customer input. And then moving on to project milestones. So the project launched earlier this year in July. We are currently wrapping up on the benchmarking and initial research phase. The next steps will be to review our arrearage management and customer return policies, begin the customer and external stakeholder engagement, and then move into the policy and program design phase to have the draft affordability and arrearage management report and plan. The project is expected to be completed in fall of 2026. Together, the Power Affordability Project, along with the metrics that we're tracking and outreach events, reflect our continuing work to understand customer affordability and inform future engagement and support efforts.
All right, and thank you. So that does conclude our presentation. We're happy to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks, you guys. This is such a wonderful kind of like kickoff to having some of this information in front of us. So I really appreciate the time that you spent to kind of think thoughtfully about how to blend it with the rest of the Clean Power SF updates and add this new dimension where we really think about every San Franciscan. The thing that I'm interested in kind of understanding a little bit more, and so hopefully we can just have a little back and forth conversation, is how you plan to link this broader kind of like subject matter study with the same kinds of information that you showed is available by district. So for example, like we saw that in every district, we know the number of actual active customers, we know the number of customers that are already enrolled in CARE and FARA, and then we also know the number of San Franciscans that are still being disconnected, maybe even while they're enrolled in those discount programs. How are we planning, how are you guys thinking about going from understanding the broader landscape of best practices and then thinking about setting a benchmark of San Francisco to get to something like zero disconnections?
Thanks, Isaac. I would say that right now, a lot of our customer outreach and even with disconnection or arrearage management is focused on like reactive customer outreach. So it's like a customer is behind on their bills by X amount, and then that's when they start getting notifications from us. Mm-hmm. Through this effort, something that I really want to get out of it is proactive customer research. So providing more support for customers before they get to that point where they are at risk of disconnection.
And I'll also add, too, that we sort of continue to actively work with our customers with a variety of program interventions. One of our programs that is listed as sort of an operating program, because it is, and we're sort of in the midst of expanding it, is our budget billing program, which kind of evens out bill payments through the year so that people don't get like a shock during periods or seasons of high use. The affordability drives are a huge deal for us to enroll customers in CARE, which results in about a 20% across the board discount, as well enroll customers in the arrearage management program. That is more, I think, more on the PG&E side, but you know, we're sort of really actively engaging with customers to get, you know, I agree to get this number down to zero.
Thanks. Something that you mentioned there about the opportunity, or like there's an opportunity that I kind of heard, so I want to like ask a little bit more about it, which is, you know, I've worked on these issues at the state level for some amount of time, and one of the opportunities that we often saw that CCAs and SFPUC could step in and serve is as basically a single point of contact and intake, right? Meaning like when customers say, hey, I'm having trouble paying my bill, you not only address that need, but you also involve the other suite of programs. It sounded like from the presentation that you guys serve in that role already. I'm curious if you can like talk more about that as like a deliberate design that you're doing in terms of program delivery as a single point of contact, or if that's something that we would maybe look to expanding into it with that more deliberate focus.
You know, I think we'll need to kind of take that question back to, you know, sort of our colleagues with SFPUC. I don't know if I can provide a clear answer on that right now, but but I think it's a compelling sort of notion for Clean Power SF and, you know, other CCAs to sort of be that kind of like customer sort of entry point.
Yeah, I've heard about like how program implementers, so often because we're outsourcing a lot of this to the private sector, this is where like SFPUC has like a unique opportunity, I think, is that because we're a public agency where people know they can trust us and come to us, or just generally, right, across the city of San Francisco, like we have the opportunity to kind of like streamline that budgeting and that customer experience, which is one of the major barriers that I've witnessed outside of places like SF, where basically third-party implementers become the accounting backstop and filling in that role. So I just wanted to add a little bit more explanation of how I've seen that evolve in absence of a planned delivery system, which I think is maybe the opportunity for us when we think about our unique situation here in San Francisco. I wanted to ask you, Adrian, whether you noticed any insights based on the district by district breakdown, or if they tended to track what we might expect based on knowing each district's race and income demographics. So in my experience, often disconnection data and enrollment in these low-income rate assistance programs is not, it's highly, highly, highly correlated with existing literature on public health disparity and economic insecurity information. I'm curious if that tracked for you, or if you saw something that caught your eye and you said, wait, I should probably look into that a little bit more.
I think for the most part that did track, and that was especially emphasized during our affordability drives, because we tried to focus it on areas that we felt might have more people coming out. But even then, we had one event where in the Mission where we had a customer that came out from like the Sunnydale neighborhood, which is quite a trek. Mm-hmm. So I would say that it does track, yeah. Mm.
Okay, thank you so much.
Commissioner Williams.
You asked like two-thirds of the questions that I wanted to ask, so thank you for making that easy. Just a question on the all-electric multifamily program. I'm curious about what the enrollment breakdown is, and you had mentioned that it's first come, first serve, so like considering and just wondering what how much capacity it has and if it's a finite amount.
Oh, that's a really good question. So we just started, I believe, rolled out the program to Clean Power SF at the end of last month. So it might be something that we'll need to put on our sort of follow-up to-do list to give you a better sense of.
And did you have a kind of comms plan around that to get the word out?
Yeah, absolutely. We use a lot of our sort of existing channels. We have a pretty strong sort of connection database with community-based organizations, building owners and their owner representatives throughout sort of the affordable housing space. We started that program serving Hetch Hetchy customers and have expanded it to Clean Power SF. So I think it's sort of within that same sort of scope and on that same kind of marketing plan or a similar outreach marketing plan.
Thank you so much. And I wonder, just in terms of thinking outside the box when it comes to practicing like a holistic approach when folks' power gets cut off and they come and ask for help and seek some sort of service or support, I wonder what we can do to address that. And I don't know, I see it almost on part when I think about someone getting evicted and the kind of services that the city provides and showing up and preventing that from happening. I hope in the future that we can address this the same way. And thank you so much for your work.
Thank you.
Answering the questions.
Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks. I'll build on that question from Commissioner Williams, or that last comment, actually, and maybe make a specific request of you, which is, so in case you're not super familiar with the statutory jurisdiction of the Local Agency Formation Commission, one of our obligations is to think about the streamlining of municipal services, right? And so that extends far outside of the power enterprise and really looks at how does the city deliver its services across the board in a way that is meaningful, makes sense, isn't confusing, and so on. Some of that's my own my commentary on how I envision that, but you can look up the statute as well. So I would be really curious about where you see some needs that we could fill in terms of the arena of municipal services review, where we can identify ways that other groups across the city, other important departments that also have their hands full, but are looking at some of these same issues, right, around habitability, around clean energy deployment, around housing security, economic justice, and public health, how we can think about this as a really holistic approach to San Franciscans' lives, right? The energy bill is one of the higher kind of like priority issues in many people's lives, and we know from the statistics that It is a very deeply felt problem. People will often trade food or medicine to pay this bill and to stay in their homes. So in my from my point of view, it will take kind of like a really holistic approach, and that's where we have the opportunity as a unified city to come together. So I guess my request is I'd like to hear from you guys how you think municipal service review and thinking about our role as LAFCO could aid in developing or activating another kind of tool in the disposal, or like at your disposal, in addition to the study and the other work that you're doing internally. Yeah. Thanks you guys so much. This was so wonderful to get this update.
Thank you, Commissioner. So well said, as well as Commissioner Williams. The point about, I think it was 36,000 or 38,000 customers who've been notified that they are at risk of service disconnection. Is that largely for lapse in, this is for lapse in payments?
This is for, I believe it is for mostly late payments, like a missed bill, right? On an account. So, I think a number of those customers may have gotten multiple notices in that period as well. Yeah.
And then, do you have any numbers on hand as to what the average, debt is for those customers?
That's something I believe we can report back on.
I would love to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Sevier.
I mean, thanks for your question, Chair Fielder. Something that was on my mind at the same time was like whether or not, so I understand that a lot of the data that you're getting on disconnections is delivered in that CPUC proceeding, right, where they issue that monthly report.
Yes.
And I was curious if the report is clear enough to tell you about who is receiving the notice and then is referred and successfully enrolled in a diversion program, or like, you know, into one of those rate assistance programs, or if they simply are reporting the numbers of disconnections, the number of disconnection notices and then the final number, but they're not making that link in between.
Yeah, so that report that's available, I think, in the proceeding, unfortunately does not help us make those connections for, particularly for San Francisco, you know, sort of by any geography lower than city and county. We do, the data that we look at does, I think, have we have sort of some technical data that we are sort of still deciphering. So it might be that we want to take another look and see like what kind of connections we can make from that data.
Does this mean that you have like other sources of data outside of the publicly reported stuff because of your role as the utility?
We do. We receive a report, like an Excel file, highly technical for us. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of trying to visualize some of the fields, and so I think we can make some of those connections, but I'd have to look in particular at them. Yeah.
Thanks so much. Yeah. You guys, this work feels so important at this time of like really deep economic uncertainty, right? And because, as you noted so well in your presentation about the just ever-present cost of living crisis here in San Francisco, this work is so, so important because it's really addressing not just like, of course there's benefits to all San Franciscans through what Clean Power SF does, but this work on affordability really asks who's the most vulnerable and about to like fall off of this cliff into a state where they don't have access to electricity at all. And as we know and can read about in the news often, this and is supported by the academic literature and so on, utility disconnections lead to housing evictions. There's no class of housing in the United States or in the city of San Francisco in which lack of electricity doesn't trigger eligibility for eviction. And so figuring out ways that we can reduce the number of disconnections to zero also increases our housing security, which reduces the burden on all of our other social programs around homelessness and taking care of folks. So I just want to just really keep underscoring how important this work is to us and just thank you for your focus on it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the presentation. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Seeing no other names on the roster, Mr. Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you. Members of the public who wish to speak on this item can press star 3 to be recognized. Those in attendance can line up to speak at your right. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes. Would you like to speak, sir?
Oh, no, I'm not a member of the public. Sorry.
There's nobody on the telephone line for public comment.
Thank you. Seeing no public commenters, public comment is now closed, and we do not need to take action on this matter. Before I move forward, I just wanted to note that I misspoke about our SFGov TV representative today, and I just want to thank Jeanette Eganloff, who is staffing us for SFGov TV. Mr. Clerk, please call item number 5.
Yes, there was no action on item 4. Item number 5 is the Local Agency Formation Commission 2026 regular meeting schedule.
Thank you. And for this, we will have a presentation from our LAFCO Executive Officer, Khalid Samurai, on the LAFCO regular meeting schedule for calendar year 2026. Executive Officer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. I have SFGov TV, I have a presentation. Thank you. The following is the proposed meeting schedule for the calendar year 2026. All meetings will begin at 10 a.m. in San Francisco Board of Supervisors chamber, this room, and they'll occur on odd-numbered months in 2026. This meeting schedule anticipates that the Commission would approve the proposed fiscal year 2026-2027 budget at the March 20th meeting, and the final budget at the May 15th meeting. The recommendation today is to adopt a motion to approve the proposed 2026 LAFCO meeting schedule or offer any preferred amendments.
All right. Colleagues, any questions or comments? Seeing no names on the roster, Mr. Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Yes, members of the public who wish to speak on this matter can line up to speak at this time. If you're online with us, you can press star 3 to be recognized. We do not have anybody online to speak, and there's nobody in the room.
Thank you. Seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed. And is there a motion to approve the LAFCO 2026 regular meeting schedule?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sevier, seconded by Commissioner Williams. Mr. Clerk, please call the roll.
Yes, on the motion to approve the schedule. Commissioner Sevier.
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. That motion passes without objection.
Thank you. Without objection, the LAFCO 2026 regular meeting schedule is approved. Mr. Clerk, please call item 6.
Yes, item 6 is the LAFCO policy analysis recruitment.
All right, so we will have another presentation from Executive Officer Khalid Samurai on the recruitment process. Executive Officer Samurai, you have the floor.
Thank you, Commission. Yeah, I'm just up here for the rest of the meeting. today I'm presenting you with the proposed job description and process for hiring a LAFCO policy analyst. The first thing you see is the budget we adopted for the 2025-2026 fiscal year and the proposed budget for 2026-2027. The purpose of showing you this is to show you that we do have the finances to hire a policy analyst for the 1 year. The position will be permanent exempt with the possibility of extension. That extension would not occur until after this, the 2026-2027 budget is passed next year. This is the expected process and timeline. As you can see, it's a very optimistic timeline for hiring, which is why I also will be requesting the ability to extend the recruitment timeline, including length of application period, closing date, interview panel date range, and meeting date to consider panel recommendation as needed with the approval of the chair. This will be an 1823 senior administrative analyst position. I intend to convene a panel of three members. The application will be posted on the SFGov Careers website for approximately 1 month with a closing date of December 31st. And we hope to complete the panel interviews in the first half of January of next year. And then finally, my hope is to present you with the final consideration of the panel at the January 16th, 2026 regular LAFCO meeting for approval. The recommendation today is to adopt a motion to approve the 1823 policy job analyst description, the recruitment process, including allowing the executive officer with approval of the chair to extend the timeline as needed.
All right, colleagues, any questions or comments? Seeing no one on the roster, is there a motion to approve the 1823 policy analyst job description and the recruitment process, including allowing the executive officer with the approval of the chair to extend the recruitment timeline as needed?
I'd like to make a motion.
Moved by Commissioner Williams. Seconded by Commissioner Sevier. And Mr. Clerk, please call the roll.
Would you like me to take public comment first?
Excuse me. Yes, please.
Yes, members of the public would like to speak at this time. Can press star 3 if you're online. And if you're in the room, you can approach the podium. There's nobody in the room. And we don't have anybody online at this time.
Thank you. Seeing no public commenters, public comment is now closed. And there is a motion on the floor. Mr. Clerk, can you please call the roll?
Yes, on that motion, Commissioner Sevier.
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. That motion passes without objection.
Thank you. Without objection, the motion is approved. And Mr. Clerk, please call item 7.
Yes, item 7 is the authorization to amend the legal services agreement with Richards, Watson, and Jerson to extend the term to January 31st, 2027, and increase the not-to-exceed amount to $360,000.
Executive Officer Samurai, you have the floor.
Thank you again, Chair. Today, I'm requesting the authorization from the Commission to extend our agreement with our legal counsel, RW&G Law, and our represented by Inder, our amazing legal counsel. Our current contract ends this January, and this third amendment to that contract would extend the agreement to January 31st, 2027, and increase the not-to-exceed amount from $325,000 to $360,000. For our last complete fiscal year, 2024-2025, our budget for legal services was $53,000 throughout the year. Our legal expenses totaled a little under $11,000. For the duration of this contract, LAFCO has expended a total of $216,000 as of October 31st of this year, which leaves a little over $100,000 remaining in our capacity. Because we have been using our legal counsel sparingly and because of Inder's amazing work, and efficient work, we've been able to stay well under budget for the last several years. Therefore, barring any anticipated and expensive legal work, we should be able to stay well within the not-to-exceed amount of $360,000. The recommendation today is to authorize the executive officer of LAFCO to execute the contract amendment with RWG Law to extend our legal services through January 31st, 2027. And to increase the not-to-exceed amount to $360,000.
Thank you, Officer Samurai. Anyone with questions or comments? Seeing no names on the roster, Mr. Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Yes, members of the public who wish to speak can press star 3 at this time if you're online and approach the podium. There's nobody in the room, and we do not have anybody online at this time.
All right, seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed. Is there a motion to authorize the executive officer to execute the contract amendment with Richards, Watson, and Gershon to extend services through January 31st, 2027, and to increase the not-to-exceed amount to $360,000?
I'd like to make a motion.
Motion made by Commissioner Williams, seconded by Commissioner Sevier. Mr. Clerk, please call the roll.
Yes, on that motion, Commissioner Sevier. Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. That motion passes without objection.
Thank you. Without objection, the motion passes. Mr. Clerk, please call item 8.
Item 8 is general public comment. Members of the public may address the commission on matters that are within the committee's jurisdiction and not on today's agenda. There are no members of the public in the room at this time, and we do not appear to have anybody online for public comment at this time.
Thank you. Back to you, Mr. Samurai.
Yeah, so just to make sure, item number 8 is the executive officer's report.
My apologies. I guess my script is off. Give me a moment.
That is also my fault.
Yes, my apologies. Backtracking. Item number 8, executive officer's report.
Sorry, if there's any error in the script, Victor, it's completely my fault. Thank you, Chair, once again. I have a few updates for you. The first is that LAFCO has issued a request for proposals for a municipal housing agency pilot study. Just as a reminder, this is a study to determine the recommended structure of a municipal housing agency pilot to create and manage cross-subsidy mixed-income city-owned housing. The final deliverable from this study will be a report used to inform the budget recommendations for implementation of the November 2020 Prop K, which authorized the city to own, develop, construct, acquire, or rehabilitate up to 10,000 units of low-income rental housing, and potentially inform the actions of the Housing Stability Fund Oversight Board. The RFP was issued on November 10th, and the deadline for proposals will be January 5th, 2026. We opened the window for proposals longer, as this is the third time we've issued this RFP. The first two times in November 2024, LAFCO issued a notice of intent to issue no award. Just as another side note, municipal and social housing is actually defined in the San Francisco Administrative Code, which has been incorporated into this RFP.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, please go ahead.
Apologies. SFGovTV, I have another. I also wanted to provide some updates on the Green Bank. On October 28th, of this year, the Board of Supervisors approved a resolution to urge the Treasurer to initiate the process of establishing a San Francisco Green Bank once funding is identified or received for the pre-opening work. That same resolution requests LAFCO provide assistance as requested to the Treasurer and the Board, which we'll happily continue doing. This resolution does not have funding, however, it is an important step indicating San Francisco's commitment to the Green Bank and public bank work, and the financial work that these entities will do to help the city achieve its small business recovery goals, green initiatives, and affordable housing goals. The San Francisco Public Bank Coalition, an advocacy organization located here in San Francisco that has been advocating for a public bank for years, also conducted a poll during August of this year. A random sample of approximately 540 San Franciscans were surveyed and showed that 67% of likely voters in San Francisco support establishing a public bank. 51% had heard of public banks before they took the survey. 69% of likely voters are more likely to support a public bank if it begins a green bank, which is San Francisco's current plan. And voters are also more likely to support the bank, the public bank, when additional goals are included, including lowering costs and to give the public greater access and control over their funds. All to reiterate the desire for a green and public bank in San Francisco. the margin of error for this survey was 4% to 4.4%, meaning even if we took that into account, over 60% of San Franciscans support a public bank and a green bank in San Francisco. Final update is just looking at Ford calendar for the next three meetings, which all occur next year. At the January 16th meeting, I hope to provide further updates on the Green Bank development, an update on the Municipal Housing Agency pilot study, and provide you with the panel decision for the LAFCO policy analyst. At our March 20th meeting, we'll be approving the proposed 2026-2027 budget and hope to approve the Municipal Housing Agency pilot study contract, which will be made by the panel, and additional updates on the Green Bank. And finally, at our May 15th meeting, we will approve the final 2026-2027 budget. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Executive Officer. Commissioner Williams.
Hello, thank you for the presentation. If we could go back to the Green Bank slide, if that's possible.
SFGov, could you put that up, please? Thank you.
Thank you so much. First of all, I commend the Board of Supervisors for unanimously approving a resolution to urge the Treasurer to initiate the process of establishing a Green Bank. The funding is what piques my interest. I'm wondering what the projected cost of that would be in terms of the pre-opening work. I don't know what pre-opening work means.
happy to answer that. The budget estimate for the pre-opening work to open the San Francisco Green Bank is anywhere between $1.3 million and $2.6 million. That work will include mainly two things. One is hiring a professional banker who would be qualified to be CEO of the San Francisco Green Bank. However, we cannot offer that position until the entity exists. And so this person will be coming on in a temporary capacity to set up the Green Bank for us. The other is the city attorney's office currently does not have banking law experience in-house. And so a chunk of that pre-opening funding will also go towards hiring an outside legal counsel experienced in banking law and corporate law to actually help that professional banker set up the Green Bank. And then on day one of the San Francisco Green Bank, the Reinvestment Working Group's plans estimate it will require $26 million in capitalization and funding to operate successfully.
Great. Thank you so much.
Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks, Khaled, for the great presentation. It's exciting to see how the work for LAFCO is shaping up through the first part of next year. I'm curious how your I'll make a comment and then a question, which is, it was really interesting to see the polling information show the support for a public bank and it being so closely tied to those investments being used to meet the city's climate goals and its clean energy goals. Something that has been on my mind as throughout like our meeting today, thinking about this affordability question that we heard a great presentation on from PUC, and thinking about the ongoing work to decarbonize San Francisco, is how closely these things in terms of public finance, the municipal housing study, and our efforts on thinking about supporting the public power process across San Francisco are aligned. And I'm curious what is on your mind as you think about the powers of LAFCO to think about the streamlining and the work that we could do on decarbonizing our city neighborhood by neighborhood.
Thank you for your question, Commissioner. The issue of affordable housing, the green initiatives, and small business recovery are all interrelated. People who live closer to their jobs produce less carbon. Getting to work provides stability to small businesses. So just in that one example, all three of these things are interrelated. Additionally, last year, the budget and legislative analyst to the Board of Supervisors conducted did a report that showed that the way that municipal social housing is feasible in San Francisco with the existence of a public bank. So these two pieces of work also are interrelated and go together. Additionally, the Department of Environment is going to be releasing an update to the Climate Action Plan, which will include a section on financing the Climate Action Plan. As the Commission may recall, after the 2020 one Climate Action Plan update, the Department of Environment conducted a study with the CLE UC Berkeley clinic that showed that enacting the Climate Action Plan as we had it back then would require anywhere up to $20 billion. So the city currently does not have a plan to fund the Climate Action Plan. However, both social housing and public banking would be important steps in providing security for San Franciscans to be able to focus on these green initiatives.
And is in the municipal housing study that we have out, or the RFP that we have out now for the municipal housing study, does it especially explicitly request that the agency be limited to thinking about like all electric housing, or is it agnostic on that right now?
That's not included specifically. However, it is definitely something we can discuss with the proposer who wins, who successfully completes, the proposer who is selected by the panel to make sure that all housing is green housing. I believe there is actually a administrative code section that states that new city buildings after a certain date must comply with certain green initiatives. And I'd be happy to report more on that at our next meeting.
Okay, thanks so much, Khaled.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just had a question about if we've received any questions about the municipal housing study yet.
There's been one question so far that I have included on the LAFCO webpage for the municipal housing study and informed all everyone that I originally sent the proposal to, which was there was a typo about the not to exceed amount, and the not to exceed for the RFP for this study is $300,000, which has been updated to all interested parties.
Okay. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how that process plays out and seeing if this round will attract applicants. So thank you for your work on that and pushing it along. I continue to remain excited about a green bank and eventually a public bank, especially as talks about an AI bubble really have been percolating throughout the country and certainly the world. I'd like to point out that the Bank of North Dakota, which has been around since 1919, sufficiently weathered through the Great Recession and is by nature countercyclical, which means that when credit dries up, it's still able to dispense credit to entrepreneurs, in the case of North Dakota, homeowners, and they have actually been able to bolster the state budget in times of revenue deficits. And since it became profitable in the mid-20th century, it has returned more than $500 million to the state's general fund. As we talk about how to stabilize our economy, and in San Francisco, where AI is pretty tantamount in our economy, our local economy, and as we continue to face revenue shortfalls, I think a public bank and a first iteration of it in a green bank is sound economic policy, especially for working San Franciscans. So thank you so much for your continued work on that. Seeing no one else on the roster, let's open this up for public comment. Mr. Clerk.
Yes, members of the public who would like to speak can approach the podium at this time. If you're online with us, you can press *3 to be recognized. There's nobody in the room for public comment, and we do not have anybody online.
Thank you. Seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed. And we do not need to take action on this matter. Mr. Clerk, can we move to item number 9?
Yes. Item number 9 is general public comment. Members of the public who wish to comment, provide general public comment, can approach the podium at this time or press star 3 to be recognized. There's nobody in the room for general public comment, and there is nobody online.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Seeing no commenters, public comment is now closed, and we do not need to take action here either. Mr. Clerk, please call item 10.
Item number 10 is future agenda items.
Colleagues, any future agenda items you'd like to note? Seeing no one on the roster, Mr. Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Yes, there's nobody in the room for public comment, and there's nobody online for public comment at this time.
Seeing no one in the queues, public comment is now closed, and we do not need to take action. Mr. Clerk, is there any other business before us today?
There is no additional business before this before the commission.
Seeing no other business, we are adjourned. We'll be right back.